Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Patrick, and you're listening to the Phileas Club for the month of September 2008. The world almost ended twice. Hello everyone and welcome to the Phileas Club, the show where we talk about world news and we try to have fun doing it. I'm Patrick Béja, I'm your host, and today I have two wonderful people with me. I think it's a recurring thing that I say people are wonderful all the time, but it's always true, so what can I say? We have Turkey, who is our very own resident John C. Dvorak, only in an Arab version. How are you, Turkey? Yeah.
I'm great. You just need to visit my website, SaudiLife.net.
SaudiLife.net.
I had to plug it in, just like Dvorak does.
So you're back home now, right?
Yep, I'm back in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, trying to settle down and looking for a job.
Cool. And we also have another wonderful host with us, Tom Merritt from Buzz Out Loud. How are you, Tom?
Lies do not become you, Patrick. No, I'm doing fine. Thank you. Thank you for deeming me wonderful, even though I blew you off on the first attempt to record this episode.
Yes, I'm persistent and very forgiving.
Well, good. I'm glad of the second part very much. So.
The reason why I wanted to have you on, though, is, well, you know, Buzz Out Loud is great and everything, and I love it. But I really figured that you would be interesting to talk to in that setting when I started listening to East Meets West, the show that you do with Roger Chang, your old pal.
Yeah. Roger and I go way back. We used to work at ZDTV together way back in the late 90s, and we were both in the technology industry and wanted a venue to kind of talk about our other interests. And not that we don't touch on technology in the East Meets West podcast every once in a while, but it lets us just kind of be free-flowing and experimental, and we'll talk about politics or science fiction or whatever comes to mind. It's really
topics
fun.
Topics that really go well together, politics and science fiction.
Often they do.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll ask you more about that at the end of the show when I give you guys a chance to plug your own blogs, because God knows they're not really famous at all. Before that, we're going to go through all the news that happened in the past month, and we're going to start right now with the international news section. So, international news. I guess there's only one really big story that dominated everything in the past month, and that's, of course, the financial crisis that started with, well, it started a while ago, but the really big thing that blew it open for the whole world, I think, was the demise of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, which, by the way, first of all, what's the deal with those names? I don't get it.
Well, you need to have something that people can identify with when they want to get a mortgage loan after they've been turned down by real banks.
So, what are exactly Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and what happened to them? They loan money to people to buy houses, right? Is that it?
Yeah, I think the idea, if I got this right, and I'm not exactly, you know, the expert in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, but they were set up by the government. They were government programs that were spun out as private institutions in order to supplement the mortgage loan marketplace, so that folks who didn't normally get approved for loans because the banks you know, were very interested in a high standard at the time that these were created, would be able to have a marketplace to go get loans. And I believe they may have engaged into some buying some loans from banks that were maybe a little higher risk. And so the impulse was good in setting them up, which was to widen the marketplace so that more people could get into home ownership. The idea at the time was that it's a very low risk situation to set these up because the marketplace will always go up. I heard people as recently as a year ago saying the housing market will always go up. It will never fall.
Well, in a sense, it's true because now we're in the middle of a crisis. But if you know, land or housing is the only thing that will never stay down forever. It's not like, I don't know, people are going to stop using cars one day and cars are not going to sell. And if you own a car company, you're going to be down, which might conceivably happen at some point. The houses are always going to be there. And down the road, down the line, like in 10 years or whatever, the market is going to recover, right?
So well, sure. I mean, you could say that about most markets, is that they tend over a long enough term to go up.
Well,
and I think you're absolutely right that housing has got a nice solid foundation to it, no pun intended, because everybody needs a place to live. But what happened was they started loosening their terms for giving out loans, started getting people into these loans that depended on not only housing prices going up, but going up at a certain rate. And when investors who were fueling these rate rises pulled out of the housing market, it caused the rates of the housing prices to flatten, which caused people who had these adjustable mortgages, these jumbo loans, these ridiculous loans that they should never have been approved for, not be able to get the equity back out of the house that they were relying on to continue to pay. Okay. They default on their mortgage. The mortgage is for the house is foreclosed upon. Now you've got all these junk mortgages that the banks have to get rid of. They can't find anybody to buy them. They don't have liquidity anymore because they're not getting the money from these mortgage payments. So then they start to not be able to get credit to continue their business, and then the businesses fail.
So that's the explanation of the system. Now, what happened when Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were in really big trouble is that the government bailed them out. And that happened after Bern Stearns, which is another big institution, got bailed out. And then a few days later, Lehman Brothers got what's the name of the regulation to... it got bankrupt.
Yeah, it went bankrupt.
Merrill Lynch, which is another huge institution, got saved by Bank of America. It was almost bankrupt. And AIG, which is another big insurer who was the insurer for Lehman Brothers, almost collapsed. So anyway, the point of it is that a lot of people were saying that, well, most people agree that this is the worst financial crisis since the big depression of 1929, and that the whole financial system in the whole world is in jeopardy at the moment. And the American government is trying to get a plan together to save those institutions so that the world doesn't end, I guess.
Yes. So, in a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
If the Large Hadron Collider doesn't kill us, the financial system will.
Yeah, the world might end twice. That's double the chances. I think
it's
just
like
got
a zombie movie.
Yeah, I think I just got the title for the episode. anyway, so what I want to know now is how those things were perceived in each of our countries. I guess we'll maybe I'll start with Turkey. You've been back in Saudi Arabia for a while, and you guys have oil. You're not that. I mean, the financial system is obviously a big deal for you, I guess. But was that foreign to you guys? Did you see that from afar, or how did it go?
Well, actually, in Saudi Arabia, our biggest problem is that the Saudi currency is linked to the dollar. So there's a fixed rate of exchange rate between the U.S. dollar and the Saudi riyals. So as long as the dollar keeps falling down, everything here is going up in prices like crazy. So anything that affects the U.S., unless the government here decides to change the exchange rate or just changes the currency it's linked to, everything that happens in the U.S. affects us very, very directly.
So everyone was glued to their TV looking at what was happening in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, it's not as much as things have been bad like for a few months now, ever since the dollar fell. So, and the change in dollar price, actually the dollar is a little stronger than a couple of months ago. So this financial crisis isn't affecting us as much. We're more concerned about how the dollar does more than what the financial companies and corporations are doing, because they don't really affect us that much. And the few people, although there's a huge investment in the U.S., I think there's at least $6 billion of investments from Saudi nationals in the U.S., so they are affected. But beyond that, the normal people in Saudi Arabia, all their concern is whether the dollar is up or down. The prices are crazy here. People are not very happy at all. Everything is expensive.
So do you some people in America are afraid that the $700 billion bailout of the financial system could further devalue the dollar, which would impact Saudi Arabia as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems with the whole bailout system, is they're trying to save the entire financial system, and they're ignoring the people. Like, I think they should spend more of the money on saving the people who have all of these loans and are falling badly in the U.S. instead of helping these financial systems who are completely idiots. They got themselves into this, and then the taxpayers are saving them and getting nothing out of it.
Yeah, this is one of the arguments that was made over that incredible plan, the $700 billion plan. Which was, you know, this is a sort of a normal flush out of the system. And the way the capitalist system is implemented is that when something fails, it rots and falls away. So it's hard for a few months or even a few years. But at least the thing that didn't work or the idiots that provoked it are going to go away. And with that bailout, it's preventing that purge from happening.
And it depends on how they do it. I mean, this is where the debate, at least in the United States, I find totally unhelpful, because you have people out there saying they're just giving money to the corporations, and it's not exactly what they're proposing. What they're proposing is to make the government a player in the free market and buy securities that are high risk. So it's a little more nuanced. It still could have the same effect, though. But it's definitely a free market approach to fixing the free market problem, but it's not an entirely pure free market, because you have the government messing with the free market. They're not necessarily just giving money away, but they are sort of purchasing securities that might not get purchased otherwise. And they might win. I mean, that's the thing. The problem is, the way the free market's supposed to work is the government isn't supposed to do that. Some smart person who thinks they can figure out how to make money off these bad securities is supposed to come in and buy them, but nobody's doing that.
So do you think that it should be left unregulated the way it has been? Because the argument here in France is that, oh, those idiots, we've been saying that forever. We know that we need at least some amount of regulation. And I think that's what Sarkozy, our president, who is the UN's active president at the moment, said at the UN in New York. He said, you know, we can't have anarchy, which is what is happening now in the free market. You have to have some measure of regulation. And that even him, who is from the right in France, agrees with that. What's the perception? Did it go too far? Did the free market go too far? Or is socialism still a bad word in the U.S. after this?
Oh, yeah. Socialism is still a bad word in the U.S. Let me try to speak on behalf of what the U.S. is thinking in its schizophrenic, divided mind. Okay. There are the people who feel like we absolutely have to do something to fix this. More regulation is needed. And at the same time, there are people saying, but you can't just go and reward the people that messed up. You have to let the free market work. So the United States as a whole is sort of saying both things at once. Mm. We need more government interaction on the one hand, but it shouldn't be that kind of interaction, giving money to it. My personal feeling is we had the regulations in place in the 90s. They were working. What happened was, in the dot-com boom era, the Clinton administration actually started the ball rolling, saying, hey, let's loosen up on things. Let's not, you know, we're in danger of dousing this flame. let's things take off. And the Bush administration came in and poured gasoline on the fire, yeah, and lifted regulations right and left. So in my personal opinion, it feels like we need to go back to a more sensible regulation scheme, maybe not identical to what we had in the past, but we have had it in the past. So why is this so hard?
Well, I think one of the reasons of this downfall is the whole thing after 9/11 is that it's so difficult nowadays for any international corporation, anybody from outside the U.S. to do business in the U.S., and that's really hurting the economy there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That is a big part of it. When you make it hard for talent to come in and go to your schools, people want to come to the universities here and are being denied. Very intelligent people. And the brain drain has been going on since World War II. And effectively, what the United States is saying is, we don't want the brains anymore, even if they still want to come here. That's bad. And then you're also causing companies... It can get, maybe I'm overstating it, but it definitely is becoming a hassle for people to try to come to school here where they were welcomed before.
Yeah, before it would, like, I would tell from my experience, when I needed to come and study in the U.S. the first time I came there, it took me one whole day just to get my visa and I'm done. The second time, which is what, after 9/11, it took me 45 days just to get my visa to go there.
There's another thing I want to ask you guys about. I was saying that Sarkozy spoke at the UN. First of all, I want to know if you guys heard of it, or he's the president of Europe at the moment. Did you even hear that he was at the UN in New York, or did you not hear at all?
Yeah, I heard a lot of blabbering from the UN. I have no idea what they're talking about.
I was aware that he spoke at the UN, but all of the news coverage here was about Sarah Palin meeting with Hamid Karzai.
Oh, we'll get to her in a moment. So what he said, basically, the strongest message was, we have to find the people who are responsible for this, and they have to be held accountable, which is a common theme in French politics. Maybe it doesn't happen, but at least the idea is that people have to be held accountable, and they are not being held accountable in these big companies at the moment. Is that also a strong feeling in both of your countries, or is it just us?
Yeah, well, accountability is a strong feeling, although we don't get a lot of accountability in this country, but it is a strong feeling. And the problem with the U.S. knew up front, the government already knew that things are falling badly, and they did not react in advance enough. They had all of these companies just in the start. They started with WorldCom, Enron, moving slowly to this situation, and the government just was too busy blowing up and things in Iraq and Afghanistan than to worry about the local economy there.
Well, I don't think that they were too busy. I think they knew exactly what was going on, and they felt like it's not going to change things. It's not going to harm things. That housing market is strong. That power market can recover. This and that. The only market that's really collapsing in the early part of the decade is the dot-com market bubble, and that's limited. That's not going to have any wide-ranging repercussions. Genetic science market is strong. This and that. So I think it was. I think they knew exactly what was happening, and just underestimated mostly that this housing market and the oil market, I feel like, were going to go the way that they did, and not that they couldn't have seen that, not that they weren't wrong.
It's not apathy, it's the fact that they didn't see it coming.
It's not apathy, it's a little bit of didn't see it coming and a little bit of not caring. Feeling like that they would be able to negotiate their way through the mess somehow. They can fix it as it goes along. I feel like that's one of the seminal properties of the Bush administration is, we can always figure it out no matter what happens. So let's do what is our neocon principle, and we'll always, our ideology will be able to get us out of any mess we get in. And that's really being put to the test right now.
Okay. Another thing that was interesting was the reaction of the U.S., the American people, I think, to more or less the government buying AIG, that big insurer that we were talking about before. There was, in my view of it, a real feeling of we as a people bought AIG.
And well, actually, the government, Patrick, the government did not buy AIG. They gave them a loan. They bought the loan companies, they bought those, Fannie Mae and the other one. But AIG was giving a loan that they are, but it's a huge loan. They gave them $80 billion a loan.
Right. What I mean is the feeling of it, it was perceived in America as the people bought those companies and we are now the owners. And what I'm getting at is in France, it wouldn't have been perceived like that because the people and the government are seen as two completely separate entities. As like if something like that happened, the people would say, oh, the state did this and it's not, you know, it's not me. It doesn't really concern me. That's not my money. It's the, you know, whatever ethereal entity out there that's called the French state or the French government that bought it. And it was very surprising to me how personally the American people seem to take it. Do you feel, Tom, like you've invested in those failing companies, that your money has been put to use for this?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The two minds of the American populace, which is on the one hand to really believe that we the people are the government, that is a true democracy, and those representatives in government are our representatives, and everything they do on our behalf. They work for us because we pay the taxes that pay their salaries and make the government run. While at the same time, being able to talk about the government as they do things wrong, they shouldn't do this bailout, you know, and really separate it. So we have this brilliant, I guess Mark Twain said the sign of brilliance is to be able to hold two opposing ideas in your mind at once. The United States must be apparently very brilliant by that maxim, because we can do that. Because personally, I do not feel like this is being done on my behalf. I intellectually know that, yes, my tax money is part of the money that's there. I don't think people really feel it on a visceral level. In the most part, some people do, but I think we as a country, I should say, the United States as a country, really does like the idea of taking responsibility as a people, especially when the government does something wrong or very right. So when the government does something wrong, we like to be outraged. And when the government does something right, we like to take credit. But then when the government's just kind of incompetent, it's them. It's not us.
So you don't feel like you've bought Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and all those?
No, I mean, I I'm probably unusual in this way, but I know that I had nothing to do with that.
Okay. and by the way, this idea of holding two ideas at the same time might be a sign of brilliance, but it's also a very Orwellian doublethink kind of thing. So I don't know what it says about, you know.
Yes, it isn't.
There you go. One last thing about this is the way we reported it in France was sort of weird and maybe doublethink-like also, because okay, so this is the worst thing since 1929. And as you know, in 1929, people didn't have money to eat. You know, they would take buckets of bills to buy a bag of potatoes. Maybe that was Germany, but still. And so they would say, you know, this is the end of the world, and this is 1929, and we're all going to be out of money in a minute. And now on to sports news and blah blah blah, and I couldn't understand this, but I don't know. Apparently, so is it being blown out of proportion, or is there really a danger of the world actually knowing a really big financial crisis as bad as it was in 29? I don't know, but that dichotomy was weird.
Well, maybe that's just a symptom of the popular news cycle, where we have gotten so used to having things blown out of proportion because that's what gets people's attention. Like coming up on the news tonight, the chemicals in your house that will kill you. And, you know, it turns out like, well, if you didn't put the cap on the bleach, it's dangerous. You know, so we're sort of used to that from the news media. So when they say, like, you know, if we don't do something about this financial crisis, people could starve and it could bring the world to its knees. We're not surprised when they go on to sports, because, you know, we're sort of jaded, I think, at this point.
So it's the news who cried wolf.
Perhaps. Yeah.
I would like also to say that it's not that bad in France. I mean, we don't have that politics of fear everywhere. When I say politics, I mean news cycle of fear everywhere. It's pretty good for now. It's not that bad in France. Okay, I guess that's going to be enough on the financial crisis. We spent about, I don't know, 20 minutes on it, but it's probably warranted because, as we said, it was definitely the biggest news in the past month. But let's try to talk a little bit about something else also before we go to the local stories. I guess Pakistan was somewhat of a big story with Benazir Bhutto's widower, who was elected as president. And the story there is that he was known as a very corrupt part of the government before, so much so that he was called Mr. 10%, because he was taking bribes of 10% of whatever budget he would allow to a private company or whatever. We heard about this a little bit. I don't know about you guys. Is it a big deal? I mean, it should be a bigger deal for the U.S. because, you know, Pakistan is very involved in the war on terror. But
yeah, well, it was reported in the United States as that bastard Musharraf has finally been removed.
What?
And we have a Democrat that we can deal with. I know. It's insane because. Because what has been seen is Musharraf has cooperated, but not fully. He hasn't allowed us to bomb parts of his own country. And hopefully this new president will be more democratic and less of a dictator. That really was the spin on a lot of the stories that I saw here.
Well, he was a dictator, no doubt about it. But he was still, well, maybe the good kind of dictators. I don't know if that exists. And also he was an ally of the U.S. in the war on terror. Maybe not 100%, but he was definitely not as bad as some other people who were definitely not cooperating with it. So,
right, but he wasn't a patsy. He didn't let the United States just push him around. So that's not good enough. Okay. And also the fact that he was a military dictator bothered some people, and like you say, rightly so, he was a dictator. But yeah, a lot has not been reported about the reality behind the new president here. Okay. It's sort of thrown off as Benazir Bhutto's husband and Benazir Bhutto, and then it's all about her. And how wonderful she was, and not okay. much depth into what you're talking about with the Mr. 10%. Don't hear that in almost any stories over here.
Oh wow!
I rather they have a dictator in that country than having some elected president.
Why is that? Because if
you go to Pakistan, you will see the type of people there. They need someone to hold them with an iron fist. Otherwise, things are going to be crazy. And soon enough, those nuclear plants and nuclear weapons are going to be under the hands of terrorists.
Well, it's a pretty bleak picture you're painting here. But I definitely understand your view of it. And I think that in France, maybe not everyone, but we do understand the value of a good quote-unquote dictator, because
it might be a bleak picture, but trust me, I know Pakistanis very well. I met them, I've seen them as a child. I lived there for a couple of years, so I know the country there. Most of the people, the problem with Pakistan is it's very divided. There's about, like you can say, maybe 10-20% are educated well people, and the rest 80% maybe are uneducated, and they can be manipulated so easily.
Well, that's the case
by anybody.
That's the case in, well, I would argue even in some of our
Alabama
countries, as we're seeing. I wasn't going to be that specific, but it's definitely the case in any third world country. I mean, well, okay, let's move on. But if you see Iraq, the Saddam was a horrible person, and there's debate on whether or not he was, you know, it was good to remove him. But one thing that you can't deny is Iraq was handled when he was there, because he was a horrible dictator.
Well, there's a difference between Pakistan and Iraq, and I also agree that Iraq needs a dictatorship, and that's a fact of history. If you ever study the history of Iraq, you would find that the most time the country's stable is under dictatorship. And the difference is, as I said, in Pakistan, like maybe 80% are uneducated people. However, in Iraq, 90% are educated people. They have one of the highest education systems percentage in the entire Arab world and the Islamic world. So it's the only difference there is just there's so division about the sects and so on. They have the Shias, the Sunnis, and all of those differentiations that are making things difficult. It's not that they're not educated people. So that's the basic difference between the two.
Well, and I mean, I think that's this is the problem with the idea of spreading democracy by force is this idea that you can just go in and impose democracy and the benefits of democracy will become evident overnight.
The thing that I would say about this is that a lot of people see France as the you know, the birthing place of democracy in a sense. And
We gave it to you.
Oh, yeah, of course, after beheading all of those people. Great democracy movement in France.
Yeah, you know, what happened in 1789 wasn't that one day, you know, we beheaded the king and all of a sudden everyone was happy in the street, right? It gave birth to quite a few years of the most horrible period of history in France. The period that immediately followed the revolution in France was called the Terror. That's how horrible it was, and it wasn't pretty. But anyway, we should probably move on. I just want to get just a few words out of Turkey from Tipi Livni, who was elected head of Kadima and who is probably the next prime minister of Israel. Because, just let me know in a nutshell what you think of this and how it was reported on in Saudi Arabia.
Well, 2 points. Easy. Nobody cares. It's Israel. Whoever becomes president is the same old story. The second point is, I think a nice cartoon that came out in a Jordanian newspaper just says it all. A guy is holding Levy's picture and running and having all of the, and falling in love with her and running after her. Another guy tells him, stop, don't do that. She's a Zionist. And the guy just looks at him, oh, your mom is the Zionist you have. I'm going.
Okay. Tom, anything about Tipi Livni?
Well, tell me a little bit more about the accusation of her being a Zionist. I really honestly don't know enough about her.
Well, basically, we consider all Israel is a Zionist nation. So
they're all Zionists. Okay.
Yeah, it's a Zionist nation.
Tipi Livni is more Zionist than others.
It's just the whole concept. Israel is based on Zionist movement. So we consider Arabs consider everybody in Israel a Zionist. That's a basic view.
Okay. Let's close this section of the show with the second doom that will befall us pretty soon, although we got a little bit of time. The Large Hadron Collider was put online this month, and apparently it's supposed to create tiny black holes that will engulf the whole planet and destroy us all.
You make it sound like it was designed to do that.
Tom, your the quality of your connection is falling down a little bit. Are you?
I haven't changed anything on what I'm doing.
Okay.
Oh, maybe Comcast is throttling me because of my viewpoint.
Well, it's coming back.
You're 250 gigs.
Yeah. The LHC, we had a little bit of reporting that first of all, what does it do? It studies particles or something sciencey that I don't get?
It studies particles and something sciencey. I think that's an apt description.
A fair assessment, okay.
It's a super collider. So the idea is to take and collide particles together. And when you do that, it creates enough energy that the particles may split apart into the subatomic particles or change them into other subatomic particles so that you can identify them based on the way they trace. The big thing they're looking for is the Higgs boson. That will complete the chart of subatomic particles and validate a whole section of physics if it appears, if they find evidence of it. Now, the stuff about miniature black holes is very theoretical physics, and I'm not a physicist, so I'm not certain how it plays out. But miniature black holes is sort of not a misnomer, but it sounds a whole lot different than what it actually is. I mean, it creates micro singularities. And all of these things, this is what people don't understand, all of these things last for very small portions of a second. Even the Higgs boson, if they find it, won't last for very long. They'll just find traces of it. So the idea that, you know, this micro singularity would last long enough to start gaining momentum and become a big black hole and eat us all is extraordinarily remote.
Well, you know, I don't really understand all this. It's science and it scares me. So there you go.
as all science should.
Turkey, did you get any reports on that in Saudi Arabia, or again, is it too far away? Or,
well, we got reports, but nothing about doom and so on, because due to our belief system, it's just we haven't seen the signs that said that doomsday is there here yet. So we don't care. We don't believe that's doomsday yet. So.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Then now it's broken anyway, because they turned it on. They sent a proton around one direction and one around the other, or some particle. I may be getting that wrong. It may not have been a proton. And it all tested fine.
I love how geeky enough you are that you are actually want to say exactly what particle it is.
That's a side effect of doing Buzz Out Loud podcast long enough. You know, every single thing you say, you'll have someone who's an expert on that writing and going, well, actually, Tom, what it was that they sent around was a neutron. And someone will probably correct me and say, a proton or a neutron were not correct, Tom. What they actually were. But anyway, I digress. They warmed it up. They didn't collide anything. And then a part of it has malfunctioned, and it's going to take a year to fix.
Wow. So we get another year. That's good.
Well, it all comes down to the media and the country and the belief system of the people. So as I said, here in our world, nobody really cared for them. Yeah. Doomsday is far away, at least for now. They don't see any signs of it that they're
when
supposed to see.
When is doomsday?
Well, we don't have a date. We have signs in the Islamic faith. There are signs. If this happens, then that means doomsday is coming close.
So what's one of the big signs?
Sarah Palin?
I think that's one of them.
Okay, on that note, we're going to slide over gently to the local stories, and we'll get back to Miss Palin in a little bit.
Just a little tease ahead for you there.
Okay, so local stories. Who should go first? Well, you know what, guys? Maybe I'm gonna. The main stories in France. There were a few ones that were not major, and I'm curious to know if you've heard about them. But one of them was the fact that the Pope came to France, and he, of course, was received in. You know, there was a lot of people who went to see him, and he talked to the president and everything. And he said that religion in France had been sort of ostracized for quite a while. And in a sense, I think he's kind of right. Because as I've stated before, France is a very atheistic country. And I think it comes as a surprise to us how much religion plays a big role in other countries, because in ours, it's really not that big of a deal. So he said that Christians shouldn't feel guilty for being Christians. Maybe not guilty, but at least ashamed of being Christians. And in a way, they were a little bit. You know, it's a difficult thing to tackle, because it's not like we would ridicule Christians or anything in France, but it didn't play a role in politics and in the social life in general. So anyway, that's the gist of it. Did you guys hear about the Pope coming to France? Was it a big deal or not at all?
It didn't make the news with the financial crisis and the presidential election.
Well, that happened at the beginning of the month. So, okay.
Turkey? Yeah, I never heard of it myself. Okay. So.
Wow, France is going to sound very, very small this month, because that was the biggest one.
Well, when the Pope goes somewhere odd where he would never go, you know, if he went to Saudi Arabia, for instance, or Pakistan, that makes the news here. If the Pope comes to South America, then that would make the news here. But pretty much everywhere else, they assume, well, of course he went there. He rules that part of the world.
Well, he sort of does. Okay, another thing that happened was a couple of pirates of ships were captured by pirates off the coasts of Somalia. Somalia? Yes, Somalia. And the French Navy got them back. They killed some of the pirates, and everything was fine. But apparently, it's becoming a huge problem that was brought to light with those stories, because Somalia is getting a lot of piracy today. And that came as a surprise for us, because, you know, when you say piracy, I think, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean and slightly gay Johnny Depp in a brilliant role.
So, yeah, well, actually, Somalia now is one of the crossing the Malik Hormuz, the Hormuz area, is one of the most dangerous places for any ship to go nowadays. And actually, I think it was, what, 5 days ago, a ship was hijacked that had 30 T-72 armored vehicles on them.
Wow. I don't know what a T-72 is, but it sounds dangerous.
So it's a Russian armored vehicle, and they got them, and they're trying to get them back right now.
Oh. I know maybe a year or two ago, a cruise ship near Somalia was attacked by pirates, and that was when I first learned about the fact that pirates are sort of resurgent in those seas.
A cruise ship? You mean a navy? American navy ship?
I don't know if it was an American ship or not, but it was a sort of an entertainment ship, a cruise ship for people vacationing.
Oh, cruise. Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Not a cruise missile.
Yeah. And I believe during the last year in Somalia, I think I read it was 35 ships were hijacked.
Okay, so I guess the lesson to learn here is don't spend your holidays off the coast of Somalia.
Well, exactly. The French Navy, when I think of the French Navy, which I don't all that often, I'm sorry to say, but I think of that era of colonial expansion, you know, when the French Navy fought pirates all the time out in the Atlantic Ocean. So the idea of a French Navy catching pirates is just, I mean, that's like old times. It's great.
Yeah, well, actually, the French have a naval base in Djibouti, which is borders Somalia to the north. So that's basically why they're active there.
Yeah, and we still use wooden galleons. By the way.
Exactly. I'm sure that's what I'm picturing, right? It's a clipper ship, sort of.
And I'm sure someone will send an email to say that we never use galleons, and that's
yeah, right,
a Spanish
or clipper
ship
ships.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about, there would be a lot to talk, but I want to let you guys talk too, was the Socialist Party. You know, we have socialists here in France. Don't run away. They're okay.
No, we have them here in the U.S. too. They keep them under observation, I think.
Yeah, well, ours are actually one of the two major parties. The left party is the Socialist Party. So they're trying to renew the head, the prime secretary of their of the party, and the election is going to take place in a little while. So we have all the candidates who are showing up now. And the two people I wanted to highlight was, one is the Bertrand Delanoë, who is the mayor of Paris, and he's openly gay. So I don't know how incredible that sounds for you guys, but or if it's just, you know, absolutely accepted. But he's openly gay, and he might very well take the head of the party and be a candidate for the next presidential election.
I don't think that would ever happen in Saudi or the U.S.
Probably not yet for a president, although Barney Frank is an openly gay member of Congress who's leading the negotiations over the financial crisis. So it's not totally unheard of here, depending
on that.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah, of course.
Which the Republicans call socialists, so it's kind of the same thing.
The other person of note who is a candidate for that post is Ségolène Royal, who was the candidate for the left at the last election and who lost to Sarkozy. And I guess the reason why it's interesting is that she's a woman, of course, and she had a concert yesterday, I think, to sort of, I don't know exactly what it was for, but she was promoting her candidacy. And she was on stage with all this music and lights at night, and she was doing sort of like a stand-up comedian bit almost. It wasn't very funny, but it was like, you know, pandering to her base, which is understandable. And it was very strange. And also the other reason why it's interesting is that she is really not very intelligent. I mean, okay, I'm really sure that she's intelligent, but the way she talks all the time, even in the election, she was speaking in such broad terms that you wouldn't understand exactly what she stood for or what she would do. Even when you would have debates, something you can take away from Sarkozy, and I'm sure I voted for him, so
Patrick,
I'm sure it's colored.
Patrick,
but yeah,
that's called politics.
No. That's not honestly. That's not what it is. When Sarkozy talks, he explains what he wants to do very clearly, and when she talks, she says, "We need to get rid of poverty," for example, and we need.
Would you disagree with that?
I would ask to know how she wants to do it.
Who is
everyone
she again?
Wants to. Ségolène Royal. She was... Oh, you don't know who she is? I thought you got a lot of reports about her last year when the election took place.
Yeah, but she's the head of which...
The Socialist Party. Well, she's about to become maybe the head of the Socialist Party.
Okay, right.
And... So anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on this because we're going to talk about Sarah Palin, and she's definitely not as bad as
Sarah Palin.
Oh, I
thought we were talking about Sarah Palin.
Well, okay, this is my point, I guess. She's definitely not an idiot. She's not that Sarah Palin is, but, oh God, I'm going to dig myself deeper and deeper. And even some socialists were saying, I can't vote for her. She's not... Not that she's not ready, but she's not president material, which links nicely to our topic on Sarah Palin, I guess. But are not president material is still, you know, a decent politician, you know? So
What does that mean, not president material, if she's ready but not president material?
I think the idea that you get when you hear her talk is that she doesn't really know what she's doing. She knows how to speak to pander to her base, but she doesn't give you anything sensible that you can say, okay, I believe in that idea, I think that's going to work, and let's put it in place because that's the right way to do it.
I have to agree with Turkey. That does sound like a common criticism of politics in general.
Well, okay, maybe I'm not making myself very, very clear in the way that she makes me feel, but and she makes a lot
Patrick,
of people
it's,
feel.
It's clear how you feel, and maybe some people feel, but that's normal politics, especially if you go to the U.S. They never talk specifics.
Okay, maybe, you know, I'm sure there's a little bit more than this, but I feel I've spent enough time, and I haven't managed to express it in a way that's, you know,
she talks
enough.
In cliches.
More than that. But anyway, it's not because she's a socialist, but it's because I think she, as a person, is not presidential material. Anyway, let's move on to Turkey. I think you
No,
have
no, no, let's go to Tom. Tom is dying to talk about Palin.
No, really? Me?
Okay. Let's go to Tom. Go ahead, Tom. Anything you want to talk about?
Well, I don't know if you probably have heard a little bit about we're having a presidential election in the United States.
I never knew about that. So when is it?
It's a local affair coming in the beginning of November. The bigger local, if you can consider the United States local, right now is the debates that happened on Friday between presidential candidates John McCain and Barack Obama. And it was really interesting, the now speaking locally, of what the reactions have been of people in my neighborhood. And of course, I live in Oakland, California, and this is an extremely liberal area, or a leftist area, I would even go so far to
Let's
say.
Let's just say it's San Francisco for everybody out there who doesn't know where Oakland is.
Yeah. Oakland is right across the bay from San Francisco. I would consider it left of San Francisco in some respects. It's right next to Berkeley, where the University of California, Berkeley, is.
Oh, my
God. So you have a lot of Obama supporters around here, you know, no question about it. And so I saw some people, and my impression from the debate was that it was fairly close. Neither candidate really won the debate. They never debated, as is normal for United States debates. They got in some pot shots at each other here and there, but generally, you know, nobody came out looking on top. although Obama probably did a little better simply because McCain was behind going in, so you kind of have to come out ahead to win. So if anything, Obama did what he needed to do. The Obama supporters I've talked to were very tepid about his debate. One of them said, well, I hope he does better next time. Another one said, yeah, it was interesting. I feel like he appealed more to independent voters or unaffiliated voters would be a better way of putting it than he did to Democrats.
Which is probably a good thing because that's what he needs now. Democrats are not going to vote for McCain anyway. So.
Yeah, well, no, that's not exactly true. I mean, a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters
those people are just crazy, and they're just they don't have what's the word? Any I don't know the word.
They just can't take a loss.
Take a loss.
Channel they're your spiteful. Inner Dvorak, Turkey. Go ahead, insult people.
Oh, come on. These people are idiots because she lost. They're just going to McCain just because Hillary lost, and that's the only reason they're doing it.
Okay. And I think they're not going to go to McCain. I think a lot of them like to say that. It's cathartic. It makes them feel better. But when they walk into that ballot box, that's going to hurt. When they walk in to vote and they mark their ballot, they're not going to be able to bring themselves to vote for John McCain. Especially the hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters are hardcore liberals. They're just not going to be able to do it. However, John McCain is the kind of moderate who can appeal to a lot of Democrats, or could have until he picked his running mate.
Yeah, okay. Before we go on to another topic, I just want to say we sort of got a little bit of report on the debate. Most of it was, yeah, it happened and whatever. The ones who did report on it said it was even or maybe a little bit ahead for Obama, a little bit. I watched it and thought that it was sort of... I didn't really think Obama did that well. The one thing I would say, though, is that McCain played on emotions a lot. And he did, you know, appeal to the people's feelings almost on every level. And Obama was making sense with every answer he would make. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, for me, I would think that it would make me want to vote for Obama more. But as a whole, I think he wasn't too bad, McCain. Not too bad at all. He was reaching people very well, I think.
I was watching on CNN, they had a little focus group with lines going up and down, positive and negative, divided into Republicans, Democrats. Yeah, that was really interesting to watch. Whenever either one of them started to go negative and attack the other one, that green line representing the independents went down. The swing voters are tired of that, which is somewhat unusual. They're just like, that doesn't appeal to me. I want to know facts. And when they got more factual or even inspirational in McCain's case, because I think you're right, I don't think Obama really pulled out his rhetorical guns, so to speak, and got inspirational. I think he was very factual through the debate. They liked that, though. The independent voters liked that. One other thing I wanted to note, I feel like the only substantive discussion that occurred, or at least the closest thing to it, was about the diplomacy. And they got off into, well, Kissinger said this or Kissinger didn't say that. And that was ridiculous. It didn't make any difference. The point was, when you boiled it down, Barack Obama supports diplomatic negotiations without preconditions with Iran, North Korea, Pakistan. I can't remember the other two that he mentioned. Venezuela was one of them. And Cuba. And McCain does not. He supports opening diplomatic negotiations, but with preconditions. Now, McCain was trying to make it stick that Obama would be the president and go meet with Ahmadinejad right away. That's not what Obama says anymore. He did sort of say that one time. He doesn't believe that. And it doesn't make any difference what he said or what he didn't say. Yeah. I think we know what both candidates would do now. And that is a substantive foreign policy difference.
Yeah. Okay. Tom, go ahead. You can speak about whatever you want next.
Well, is that an invitation to talk about our vice presidential candidate?
Whatever you want.
Because, okay. You know, locally in California, we had the train accident down in Southern California this month where Andrew was texting while... Valid.
What?
Wait, know what you want to talk about. Just say it, Tom.
No, wait. Who was texting while he was driving?
The engineer of a commuter train was texting while operating the train, missed a signal, and ran into a freight train. You know, several people lost their lives in the accident. It was pretty horrible.
Wow. I was going to make fun of it, but if people die,
yeah, it's not. It's a big story.
We can make fun of the Hawaiian bus driver who was playing PSP while driving the bus.
What? Oh man! Well, what game?
Yeah, they caught him. They caught him on some guy on the bus. Just recorded the whole thing on video with using his camera.
He was playing the PSP while driving the bus.
While driving the bus, he got fired.
You could probably play Brain Age while driving the bus. I wouldn't want to play a side scroller or a shooter game.
It all comes down to the game. Okay.
Anyway, so you want to talk about Sarah Palin?
Well, I thought you wanted to. Okay, I actually did a blog post a few days ago about... I just want to say this as a disclaimer. You're going to talk about Sarah Palin, right?
Sure.
Okay, so I did a blog post entitled... What was it? A rant that was called Believing the Earth is 5,000 Years Old is Not Okay. And what I said in that blog post is it wasn't on her specifically, but of course she was you know part of it. It's that I'm getting tired of people validating that theory by not saying how completely idiotic it is. And it was saying that it's a threat to our society because rational thinking is at the base of our society, and believing that is not rational thinking. So if you validate it, you're doing a disservice to us as a people and as a society. So anyway, that was my rant. I just wanted to say it because it gives me a certain bias towards Sarah Palin. So go ahead.
Yeah, my biggest problem with John McCain picking Sarah Palin it has to be the science issues. Her religion is her religion, and if she believes what she believes and keeps it out of politics, that's fine. I will judge her based on her policy beliefs. Unfortunately, in this case, she's backpedaled quite a bit and said, well, yes, I do personally believe in creationism, but I don't think it should be dictated what should be taught in schools. What she's saying there is what the intelligent design movement tries to push, which is we shouldn't dictate one side or the other be taught. Teachers should be allowed to teach the controversy, so to speak. And I believe there was that British scientist who got axed from the Royal Society for promoting the same idea with a totally different take on it. What Sarah Palin is trying to do is say we should make the schools teach both evolution and creationism, or intelligent design, actually, which is a slightly different take, and let the students decide. And that's ridiculous. The intelligent design is not a scientific theory. It is working in reverse. It's very easy to defend intelligent design because all it supposes is that there is some intelligent creator who has designed this system for us. And you can then shoot down any argument against it by saying, well, that's just your theory. Where's your proof? You don't have to actually support it because it's not a scientific theory that's built up from any kind of evidence. That's where the flying spaghetti monster movement comes from. You just jump in and say, you know what? I believe that a flying spaghetti monster created a world, and you can't prove that he didn't.
Well,
and
I think
so
it
that
does...
controversy should also be taught in schools.
Absolutely. Which was a brilliant move, by the way. The flying spaghetti monster is very clever as well as very funny. But, I mean, I don't want to derail the debate about her specifically and make it into a debate about creationism. But I guess creationism in itself, if you say that the Earth was created, you know, whatever, 4.5 billion years ago, and that God did it at that moment, and that he also created the universe, that's one thing. If you say that God created the Earth 5,000 years ago, it's quite another. And
absolutely. And you're right, we shouldn't get too far off. But that really is my fundamental problem with Sarah Palin and with others like her, is that, you know what, the Pope is fine with evolution. The Episcopalian yeah. Church, fine with evolution. The Methodists in the United States, fine with evolution. This yeah. is a very radical movement that's trying to appear as if it's mainstream.
I think the reason, and that's where it touches on religion, which is a completely different debate, but for me, you know, in the blog post, which is why I didn't link it to religion in the blog post, but I think the reason why it evolves like this is that it has to do with fundamental Christians wanting to take the Bible literally. And if you can't say that the earth is 5,000 years old, as you can argue that it's said in the Bible, then there's a whole lot of things that you can't say either, because if the Bible is wrong on this, then it's going to be, it can be wrong on many other things. And I think that's the knot of the problem. That's why the people who want to believe in this young earth theory bullcrap are so adamant about it. Maybe most people don't realize that that's the reason, but the radical Christians who defend that theory want to defend it because it validates it. If it's not defended, that it invalidates other arguments from the literal reading of the Bible. But
well, for example, I would say you shouldn't take things literal, especially in holy books. For example, in our belief system in Islam, we do believe, just like Christian, that God created heaven and earth in 6 days. But if you go and ask anybody, 6 days, they would say, 6 days is according to God. 6 days could be, a day could be equal to 1,000 years in a human life, could be 1,000,000 years in human life. We don't know exactly what those 6 days are. It's just a metaphor that it took 6 days. It doesn't really exactly mean 6 days as in 24 hours.
Yeah, I believe that's even in the Torah. Or the Old Testament, or ever how those books are referred in all three religions, where it says a day unto God is like unto 1,000 years.
Yeah,
and so like unto means kind of like. It could be any amount of time.
Sure, I guess I still see this as a little bit of twisting the argument so that it fits your beliefs maybe. But this is why I was saying that it's really a radical view, and a lot of people who are Christians, I mean, I don't have a problem with religion. I just have a problem with presenting a belief as a scientific fact. And anyway, let's move away from
religion. Let's pretend that Sarah Palin isn't for creationism or teaching intelligent design in school. That interview with Katie Couric this week on CBS certainly didn't do her any favors.
You know what? I just want to say, for the few people who don't even know what happened there with Sarah Palin, she is the vice president pick for Senator McCain, so the Republican. And the problem with her, the problem that most people have with her, apart from her religious views that include, the earth thing and the pregnancy, the abortion issue, which she believes.
Does she think that earth is flat also?
Let's not. Come on. Stop it. Enough. The problem is she has very little experience as a politician, and the fact that she's a woman was seen as a brilliant move on McCain's part at first, because you would get all the Clinton lovers, right? But then we started to dig into what she believes in and what she stands for and what experience she has, and that's where the problems started to arise. And so she did a couple of interviews, which were very difficult to get the past couple of weeks, I guess. And both of these interviews were, Tom, I'll let you talk about that. What happened there?
Well, yeah, her interview with Katie Couric. Now, it was interesting. The way the package was delivered on air on CBS News was much more flattering, albeit not that flattering at all, than the raw interview they posted online, where you can see Sarah Palin fumbling around to try to answer a question, talking in half sentences, talking in fragments, at one point even saying, I remembered a talking point. Very obvious that she did not know the fundamentals of the issues, that these are things she's boning up on. if she weren't running for vice president, it would be absolutely forgivable. She's the governor of Alaska. She is actually not that unintelligent. She can speak intelligently about the issues of her state, and she's very good on camera. She's a journalist. She's a former sports reporter. Her speech at the Republican convention was excellent. So she's got charisma. But the thing is, she does it. It's not just about experience. It's about immersion in these issues and the inability to marshal the facts at her fingertips the way that people who have been doing this for decades, like John McCain and Senator Obama, can do, because they're working with it every day. She's obviously learning this stuff on the fly, and they don't allow her to speak to the press ever. Joe Biden, the vice presidential nominee on the Democratic side, is out every day separate from Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Sarah Palin is often appearing with John McCain, and when she is alone, not allowed to speak to reporters. In fact, she visited the United Nations and met with Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan, was allowed to be photographed for 30 seconds before they ushered the producers out of the room, because they didn't want them to hear her conversation. So, you know, it was funny. I talked to my sister about this when they first nominated her. My sister she's a moderate. She's not a Democrat. She's not a Republican. She lives in our hometown, small town of about 7,000 people in southern Illinois, in the middle of the United States. And she said, you know what, this would be like if Alan Gaffner, who is the current mayor of Greenville, Illinois, and has been the mayor for about 7 years. If Alan Gaffner became governor of Illinois tomorrow, and then a year and a half later, they nominated him for vice president. She's like, I love Alan Gaffner, but he shouldn't be the vice president of the United States. That's exactly the same experience that Sarah Palin has. She was the mayor of a town of 9,000 people for several years, then became governor of Alaska for a year and a half. And it's, you know, it's a big state geographically, but it's a small state populace-wise.
Well,
and of course she has experience in international relationships, considering he's the neighboring Canada and Russia.
Yeah, well, Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live here in the United States did a great imitation of her in that interview with Katie Couric, where she talked about, you know, what Alaskans do to guard themselves against the Russians. It was pretty hilarious.
Which I guess is fair enough, you know, we're bashing on her. And I honestly, sincerely think that she's not ready to be, if McCain cans, if he dies, God forbid, he's elected and he dies, she could be the president of the president of the free world. Because
what
everyone
free
has
world?
To understand the... Well, Europe, for example,
free world? There's no free world in the U.S. anymore. You should
come on. I'm talking about our
everywhere outside China,
right? Exactly. Well, maybe not.
And Cuba.
You get my meaning. and so it does concern us very much in France too. And I want to ask something about this to Turkey also. But are we being Democrats, are we being leftists in not thinking that she's a... Is there an argument that can be made that she's just, you know, she's new and she's learning as she goes and she would be fine in a few months? Well, can you make that argument, honestly?
No. And let me explain something to you. If I was an American citizen and I had to choose whether to register a Democrat or a Republican, I would be Republican all the way, because I do follow a lot of their values. However, I can say without hesitation, I would never vote to McCain and Palin. And Palin completely lost me, because she used the same words Bush used when she says it was God's will to invade Iraq. I would like to meet God and see him tell her that that was his will.
Yeah, I would like to see that too. No, I think America had a crush on Sarah Palin. I think whether it was John McCain or his advisors or the Republican Party pressuring him, they made a desperate short-term move to try to counter Barack Obama's momentum coming out of the Democratic National Convention, and it worked. They, you know, I don't mean to sound sexist, but But she really captured people. She charmed them. Everybody thought she was great. Oh, look at her. Now,
who was it?
That
it was,
charm
it was
is John, wearing off.
It was John it Stewart was, who said it was like a Disney movie, like the mom who became president or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. And that charm is wearing off now. People are like, okay, now that I've gotten to know her, I'm not as enamored anymore. The bloom is off the rose, so to speak.
Even Republicans?
Yeah, I do. I think even Republicans. Now, not the more fundamentalist extreme right, which is another reason they picked her. I think they're going to stand behind her because they believe in all of her values, including the ones we've talked about involving creationism and abortion and God telling us to go into Iraq. But the majority of the Republicans aren't like that, and they are starting to be very uncomfortable with their party's choice of nominee, as it becomes more and more evident that she is not up to snuff. She is not up to this job. And I don't think I am being partisan when I say that. I mean, I think it's become evident, and it's become a bad choice. Well, very interested to see the vice presidential debate next week.
Yeah. It's a very tricky thing, because if you attack her inexperience in a very ironic kind of way, if you attack her inexperience, then people are going to turn around and attack Barack Obama's experience. And if you attack the fact that she doesn't know what she's doing, you're going to say, "Oh, you're a sexist," and you're saying that because she's a woman.
I think that second tactic is still working, but that first one stopped working after a while, because people can evidently see the difference in capability between Obama and Palin. So that sort of, well, he's not that experienced either, that's ringing very hollow now.
Yeah. I would like to know, before we move on, Turkey, what did you hear about her in Saudi Arabia?
I got here just after the whole thing, so by the time I got here, everything was not interesting at all, so okay. I wouldn't know.
Okay. What you do know is what happened in the past few weeks in Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and maybe you can tell us about that.
Well, a few things happened back here, and one of them is a few fatwas that are pissing me off and annoying.
Maybe you can explain what a fatwa is exactly, because I think half the people would think it's, you know, declaring war.
Well, fatwa is a religious decree that from a religious leader that decrees something on a religious basis that if people are supposed to follow, Muslims are supposed to follow. So we got this, the head of the Saudi court system here in Saudi Arabia was asked a question on TV once on how to react to the whole owners of TV stations that they believe are broadcasting corruption to the youth of the nation, of the country.
What are they broadcasting, first of all? Is it like MTV and the regular satellite channels?
Yeah, okay. Stuff like MTV, music, TV series, stuff like that. Normal TV series, American movies, American TV series, anything like that. So his fatwa was that, it's a long one, let me try to quote him, because I really don't want to put words in his mouth. Part of it, he says, if the evil of those who promote corruption in belief and actions cannot be held back through lesser punishments, then they can be put to death through the judicial process.
The last part is important.
The last part is important. The judicial process is a good thing. It's there. However, the problem is nobody even looked at that part. And then you have the problem with all the fundamentals who don't believe in that judicial process. And fact is, this government, the government of Saudi Arabia, would never allow any of this to go through court.
He is the head of the judicial system.
Yeah, and he is the head of the judicial system. He just gave this fatwa that was too vague enough that it could be actually used by fundamentalists and those extremists to go out and kill all owners and people who work in TV stations and so on.
Oh, people
and
who work there, too.
It was a huge outrage. Well, it just covers them, because if the owners can be killed, come on, those are helping them. So you have it's just so vague. People can use it in different ways.
First of all, we didn't hear about this in France, which is kind of surprising too. But second of all, it came as a surprise to me when you talked about it, because I thought that Saudi Arabia, especially from what you've been telling us, that King Abdullah, is it? I'm sorry.
Yes, King Abdullah.
was very moderate and was trying to steer Saudi Arabia towards a more Western way of life and thinking.
Yeah, and that is true. And trust me, the king was really pissed off as soon as he had word about this fatwa. And even the head of the Saudi court was forced to come on TV, on Saudi TV, exactly 24 hours after that fatwa became public to explain it to the people.
Does it happen that extremists do terrorist attacks in a routine, well, maybe not routinely, but every once in a while in Saudi Arabia?
Well, not for a long time. The government is very tough on extremists. They keep on catching them and holding them back. But this is just something that could actually, you could say, this is just the light that could start a fire.
Hmm. Okay. Tom, did you hear about this?
No, I didn't. It's fascinating. So it sounds like, if I have this right, Turkey, it's a little bit of an end around the legal system to put this out there. And what would be the motivation of making that fatwa?
Well, basically, this fatwa, I would think it's complete idiocy. That's the motivation. This guy is just a complete idiot that did not know how to put the right wording into this whole thing. He should have used, this is my opinion, instead of saying that they should be killed through the supreme judicial system, they should have used, they might be punished by death if the ruler decides so. If he used that word, that would have killed most of the whole thing. Mm. But it's so vague enough that people actually can use it for their own benefit.
So you mean that it wasn't malicious intent on his part to twist, you know, to circumvent the judicial system? It was just that he didn't know how to phrase it?
Yeah, and then he's so proud of himself. He has this huge pride that he would refuse to change it. He would just try to explain it. He would refuse to change it or back out of it.
Okay, wow. Yeah. Anything else? Less depressing, maybe?
Yeah, well, another... This is a less depressing one, and this is more outrageous for me than to anybody else. In the news, that has been broadcast all over the internet, and some, even Fox News talked about it, that this religious leader in Saudi Arabia issued a fatwa declaring that Mickey Mouse should be killed.
Does the leader understand Mickey Mouse is fictional?
Let me explain what it is, exactly what it is. So I kept quiet. I decided not to react on it and wait for a couple of days. A couple of days later, that religious leader gave his explanation. It sounded reasonable, and I went out and looked for the source that they used, that they said this fatwa, that he came on TV and he issued the fatwa on TV when asked. So I saw that clip in Arabic. And I listened to it, and let me say, people just like to play things out of proportion and give meanings for something that does not have that meaning. First of all,
what was the real deal here?
Well, the real deal is this religious leader was talking about that the influence of cartoons and foreign media on Muslim kids, and he was giving examples that, for example, mice are disgusting animals, they spread disease and sickness all around, and according to religious faith, you're supposed to kill mice. And so on, and it is kind of funny that when you see
by the way, I'm sorry, I just want to make that point. It makes sense because you know rats spread diseases. Yeah. It's rats.
Yeah. We have the phrase "build a better mouse trap" because people trap mice and kill them all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So part of what he said, for example, we see this Mickey Mouse where all of the kids love him, this character, when he's a mouse that's supposed to be killed.
So was the intent to say that they might come to pet mice in their house and
yes, get yes, diseased? That's exactly what he was talking about.
Okay, so this is ridiculous in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the religious guy came out, the religious leader, and his name is Munjid, and he said, "Are you crazy? Would I issue a fatwa to kill a cartoon character? How do you kill a cartoon character?"
Oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, the things he was saying might not have been very, you know, a little bit misguided in the way he was presenting them. But again, he was making a point that can be argued. It's not like he was saying, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, it sounds like his point was that these cartoons are unacceptable.
They're encouraging kids to like rats and mice when this dangerous and such creatures should be killed.
I think is sort of ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, well.
I mean, it's always the argument about cartoons, and we have similar discussions in the United States about cartoon violence and whether violence in cartoons causes kids to want to, you know, perpetuate violence on others. And as Patrick said, it's an arguable point.
This is really annoying that, and it came, and this whole thing started by some charity organization that's supposed to be monitoring the Middle East media and broadcasting translations of everything that happens in the Middle East. I checked that website. Every single thing they broadcast is a negative against the Middle East. They pick everything negative in the Arab media and broadcast and says this is what they say in the Middle East. I never saw a single positive thing on that website.
Disney conspiracy.
What's the name of that organization so that we can identify them?
I don't remember exactly. I think it was something Middle East media something. Oh. I don't remember.
Okay.
It's just short. It has a short something. Yeah.
I guess the fact that they would broadcast negative stuff only would be bad enough. But if they twist it into a big story when it's actually not, is really problematic because a lot of people who would report on it would not have access to the original story since it's in Arabic. So
yeah, well, the whole thing was just went out of proportions. This religious leader was attacked by even Arabs and Saudis here in Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Because that's what they heard the media broadcasting, that this is what he said, and it was broadcast on CNN, on BBC, even Fox News made fun of it.
I would imagine Fox News loved it. I mean, it's just, just the kind of misunderstanding they like to twist and
exactly,
turn.
Exactly, they loved it.
Okay. Turkey, anything else? I think we're going to move on.
I think that's all for now.
Okay. We're a little bit behind, so we're just going to go to the and now for something different section to top it all off. Okay, a quirky, funny, silly story from our local places. To finish on a lighter note, do you guys have any? I have one, but I can.
I have one.
Lead the way. I'm trying to rack my brain for one.
Okay, Turkey, go ahead. Yours are always the best ones. So,
I have this is I think this is hilarious in its own way. The Ministry of Employment in Saudi Arabia, Saudi Ministry of Labor. Their website was hacked by an unemployed citizen who put the message on the main page, "Find me a job, please."
Wow, that's pretty creative. And did he get a job with it?
He didn't put his name. I doubt he will put his name. He'll be arrested.
Oh. Yeah, well, yeah, that would be another issue. But, I mean, some IT security firm would have to be interested.
Well, the whole website was horrible. The website was weak anyway. They didn't put any good precautions to protect it. And the funny part is, this hack was easily fixable. It could take 5 minutes to remove and fix. Mm. It stayed on the website for a whole day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Even during that hours of work for the ministry, nobody even tried to remove it, and it would have taken them less than 5 minutes to remove. It was a simple, very simple hack. It was just a page he put up and made a link to it.
That's silly. Okay, Tom, do you have one?
I'll decide on this one. There really isn't been a lot of quirky news in the recent past here, just because everybody's so freaked out about the financial crisis and the presidential
really
election.
I really don't see why. Yeah,
all that,
like you have other things going on.
Up in Sacramento, which is the capital of California, police are on the case of a man who is stealing toilet parts.
What?
He it's a serial toilet part stealer. He dresses up as a plumber and goes and steals the flushing mechanisms. He took two out of the California State Auto Association building in July, and they have no idea what's motivating him, but he's been doing it so often that they've actually opened a case file to track and stop him from stealing toilet parts.
Maybe his toilet keeps breaking down.
Well, yeah, maybe he's just stockpiling or you know, he's trying to build one of his own urinals. They're not that easy to purchase.
Wow, that could be the plot of a very interesting movie.
Yeah, it sounds like a Coen Brothers movie or something. Yeah.
Okay, mine is actually not that funny, but maybe a little bit strange for people, especially in the U.S. We are beginning to have a... And I didn't do that on purpose, but I did a blog post about obesity a few days ago. That's on my personal blog, by the way, patrickbeja.com, not the Phileas Club blog. And that one, that story is that we are beginning to have an obesity problem in France also, and it's not as bad as it is in the U.S., but they are taking action in the government, and one of the measures they proposed was, of course, as we deal with everything, to increase taxes. So it's very possible that in the next few months we're going to have an increased value added tax, VAT, on fat and sugary snacks and products in general, from 5%, which is the general VAT, to 20% on those products specifically. So I think in that instance, it's a good tax raise. But it was interesting that's the way. Yeah, exactly, a fat tax.
Patrick, is there anything in France you don't have a VAT on it?
Well, you know, one day. Well, actually, we don't. We have VAT on everything. But I will have to detail the amount of taxes we get in France. I hear some conflicting reports that say that we don't have as much taxes as in some other places, but. One day I'll do it. I won't do it now because we're getting really long, but it will be an interesting conversation too. Guys, we're going to end this episode. I really want to thank you for coming on. It was definitely very interesting. A little bit to the left, as usual, and I will one day do something about that also. But, you know, we're getting used to that, and we do have fun in the process. I hope that everyone understands that it's our... Most of these are our personal opinions. Anyway, I want to give you guys a little bit of time to plug your personal blogs and sites and everything. Turkey, why don't you go first?
Well, my blog is saudilife.net, and it's about Saudi Arabia and news from Saudi Arabia. I also make a podcast on it once a month, and I post news and commentary on it about Saudi Arabia every now and then.
So if you want to learn about the Middle East from a very interesting and in English, everything is in English, a very focused perspective, I really recommend that you go take a look at Saudi Life. It's definitely an interesting blog.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I wouldn't say it if I didn't think so. Tom, where can people find you? I don't mean in the streets or in real life.
I'm in downtown Oakland. No, TomMerritt.com or TomMerritt.net or however you want to put the top-level domain is sort of the one place where I kind of keep people up to date on all the different things I'm doing. But since East Meets West was sort of what influenced you to bring me on here, I'll plug that specifically. It's at subbrilliant.com/EMW. Subbrilliant with two B's, and that is a blog and mostly podcast where we kind of kick around issues for a half an hour or so every week.
How did the name come about? What's that about?
East Meets West it's a play on several things. For one, Roger, my co-host, is Chinese, and and I am European by descent. We're both born in the United States, but he represents sort of the Eastern view of his heritage and mine the Western view. I am from the eastern half of the United States, however. I was born, like I said, in Illinois, and he was born in California. So he has the western part of the country and I the eastern part of the country. And then it's also just sort of a global worldview of how we talk about things. It's trying to bring the East-West perspectives together.
Okay. So it was all of the things I thought about and not just one.
Yeah, it was kind of it popped out of one of our mouths and we're like, oh, it works on this level and this level and this level, and that's why we liked it.
You think you're so clever.
Roger certainly does.
Okay. He thinks that you're very clever, or that?
Yes, he does. He always says how clever I am.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, guys. You can find, of course, the Felix Club blog that was turned into a blog recently. It's not that I post a lot on it, just the episodes, but still, at thefeliusclub.com. You can review us on iTunes, and please do so if you like the show. You can also dig us, which would help us. I think we got up like we're on the third page on political podcasts, so if we could just get on the second page for that show, it would be great. So if you use dig.com, just go there, and well, actually you can go on the Felix Club blog and just push the little dig button there. And last thing I would say is that you can follow me on Twitter at notpatrick. It's twitter.com/notpatrick. If you like what I say and what I joke about every day, you can get that at twitter.com/notpatrick. Guys, anything else you want to add? Plug your Twitters or something like that?
Yeah, sure. Twitter.com/acedetect, A-C-E-D-T-E-C-T. If you can figure out how to remember to write that down, you can follow.
Turkey, do you have a Twitter?
Oh, yeah, but I hardly ever use it. It's Saudi. My Twitter Saudi. Is Saudi.
Just yep. Saudi.
S-A-U-D-I.
Oh, I'm going to go and follow you right now, so you're going to have to use it.
Okay, well, it's a little boring at the moment, so I'm very slow until my life starts moving a bit, then I can start twittering more.
Okay, you'll let
that
us
that doesn't
know.
Stop anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Twitter is the let's not get into what Twitter is. Okay, thanks a lot, guys. It was really nice to have you on, and I will talk to you soon, and I will talk to all of you, the listeners, next month for another episode of the Phileas Club. Thanks a lot, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank
you.